podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Don't Nearly View system, Diogo. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
Long story.
Even need to do an intro here. This is too easy. Good evening. Welcome along to the forum. I don't know where to start. We have
Amanda Stanley's agenda.
Have an agenda. I've just ripped it up. Haven't finally got into here. And Gav sticking the euro in the meter. And Pete, I don't know where to start. I think it's wondrous, and I think the whole pod should be dedicated to what the hell is going on currently at this moment in time with your head and the fact that you've got extra hands doing your hair at this moment in time.
I'm in Sunil's. I've a little bit of filming to do next week, so I have to look like this. And I'm in Sunil's effects chair, and he's making miracles. He's making me look like something from another planet.
So you're already. if you're filming next week, why is it going to take that long to get the makeup on you?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's after taking 13 hours to do this, so you can imagine what the rest will take. Yeah.
All right. Well, as you start to change into whatever you're going to change into. Yeah. No ideas. I hope Sunil is good at the FX, that he's going to actually turn you into a lifelike version
of me. Sunil is actually from Nepal, the most chilled guy in the world. He's out, and he makes the best coffee ever.
So, smash it. How are you, Sunil? It's great that we have five people on the pod tonight. Thank you. Good evening. Welcome along to the forum. We've got all sorts to talk about tonight. None of it I want to really talk about, because I was going through the agenda with Andy and I made up a brand new agenda for us to actually really talk about. So that's going to be a surprise for the rest of us. But importantly, normally you'll see Kev in the chat on a Monday night, but he's right beside me here. I'm going to point there. See, yeah. I'm good at this game.
I'm off this.
Good man, Kev. It's great to have one of the lads from the comments. But Kev, you've been on a few pods at this age, so it's not like you don't know what you're doing. And above me, of course, is Andy Young. If I can just sort of direct my finger and get up his nose.
Sorry, about that. I can't multitask.
I know, mate. I
literally can't. Trying to get the show started, do the tweets, and sorry.
To be fair, if you're a woman, it'd be no problem to you at all. Yeah. I'm just going to continue to drink my coffee to stay awake, because I do have a 5.5-week-old baby now at this stage, and it's been a long existence.
And
as a 44-year-old man, you're not designed for that type of stuff at this age. So it's definitely. It was grand when I was in my early 30s, and then sort of when I was 40, it was just a bit manageable.
You'll probably do have more patience now, though.
I do have more patience, mainly because as Kev, I'm now getting close to death, right? So I'm just going to try and enjoy every minute that I can. So we've had a good innings as this has gone along. So that's the most important thing. But yeah, we have an agenda. We're going to talk about four topics tonight. I don't know where these topics are going to, because I've taken a few of them that are probably way, way off where you think it's going to go to. Andy, you're talking about the United game and the unnatural fear that's brewing around the United game. Mm. I'm talking about fan picks and flags, right? It's basically just every time I see a fan picking a flag, the awkwardness of the people standing in the picture is unbelievable. We'll get on to this. Pete, what was your topic? I can't remember.
The fact that we're far better than we even think we are, than I even think Klopp even expected us to be.
And yeah, we probably won't get to that topic. I've got some better ones. Kev, what was yours? Oh, football, torn it off from football. Don't worry about this. I got to make everyone torn off from football tonight. So that's what it is. Evening, Andy from Mayfield, Salah's big toe. Actually getting his hair done on the live stream. What do you expect?
I drove down to Mayfield.
That's how we roll.
To have a look.
Did you?
I was doing nothing the other day.
So you drove to Mayfield and Cork because you're doing
Last week, me and Gav were talking on our big chat, where we raised a few bob for Siena, which I'd encourage anyone to do. The link is going to be up all show. There was a fella from Mayfield, and I said it was a kip. And I felt I might have been wrong in that statement, so I went down to have a look for myself. And indeed, it is a kip.
Apologies
to absolutely everybody from Mayfield.
Nobody has the internet down there. It's grand. Bar Kev, that's the only reason he's out.
No, I'm not from the city. I'm from out in the county. I'm a pure
cousin. That's the real reason.
With my dinner.
You're doing your bollocks.
Right, lads. Let's start with Andy's topic. It's the United game. And there's a couple of things I want to roll into this because there's a valid conversation to be had around. The talk about another protest because United have lost a few games. And I see Gary Neville's meant to be on a soapbox again tonight. Look, I said it at the time. Gary Neville's the most disingenuous prick you can see on the television. If you follow him and think he's a leader of political views, you just go and get your head examined. He's part of sports washing that suits his own needs, and he likes to mould the agenda to suit whatever pro-United agenda he wants to stick out there at this moment in time. He was celebrating the lads doing protests the last time, and I'm sure he'll be celebrating this time. But hopefully, if they do protest and get the game called off, don't really mind, because they probably would have beaten us had they played the game that day, given the state we were in at that point. And the fact they got the match called off meant that we absolutely battered them when we played around. So I don't mind, let them do it. But fucking protest, Andy. I'm going off to get me green and gold scarf. Get green and gold, glazers out, glazers, whatever, until they spend another 100 million on fucking Jim Jam from Tampa.
All right, fair enough.
I'm just so pissed off at this.
Yeah, I know you're right. Anyway, don't be to talk about it.
Go on, yeah.
Yeah, I know. It was the idea around the topic was just that that fear you get when it's coming up to United game, no matter what. Like, even, you know, it's kind of gone full circle where we're the ones that are challenging for titles now. And back a decade or so ago, it was our biggest game of the season. It felt like if we went to play them, we beat them. It was like winning a trophy. And for them now, at the moment, they think their manager's treading water. Their fans are clutching their straws about practically everything. Neville, who you cited there at the beginning of the season, said something's not right at Liverpool. Every time he seems to say something like that, Liverpool go on these runs. He said that at the beginning of the season, we won the league, that something wasn't right. And Salah was leaving and all those things. So best of luck to him. With all his endeavours, whether they're political or whatever they are, they seem to have a positive response for us anyway. But this fear coming into a game, I mean, they beat us and it's in our face when you're from Ireland. You know what I mean? I know if you're in Liverpool, the derby's probably the biggest game. It's the one that the kids have to go into school, or lads and girls have to go to work the following day and listen to it all day long. But here in Ireland anyway, it's Liverpool and United mainly. And there's no getting away from it. It's going to be torture if we're beaten by them. So, yeah, I just thought we'd be an interesting discussion.
Kev, I want to pitch Andy's idea around this discussion. And it's mainly because I think there's one valid part of this whole discussion around this United game playing out. And that's, I think Jurgen Klopp has called this game so badly at Old Trafford during this whole time. If anything, it's the one time that he seems to overthink a match. Every other game, he doesn't seem to overthink it. This is the one game that he's tended to overthink. from your point, how would you like to see him approach it? How would you like to see them underplaying it, essentially, which is more or less what Andy's getting at?
I don't think you can underplay it. It's going to be in the media and around Liverpool for the next 7 days. People are going to overlook tomorrow night, and everything is going to be the media and on the radio, the fans going into training. That's all they're going to hear for the next 7 days. They're going to be ribbing each other. The England lads and Brazil lads from United and from Liverpool are going to be ribbing each other all week over this. So there's no underplaying it. But I wish for once Klopp would just forget himself and just let the players go out and play how they turned out against Watford and just attack the game. It's frustrating that he pays them the respect that he would have paid a Ferguson side, because that's what United survived on post Fergie years for probably 3 or 4 seasons, the fear factor. It's just not there. And in fairness, I watched Monday Night Football tonight. I watched Neville and Carragher going through the performance against Leicester. And the first half, yeah, it was kind of disjointed, but it was there in parts. But the second half, they were brutal. And it was just so bad that if we turn up in any kind of form and they try to press like that, they try to walk through a game, we'll tear them to shreds. We really will. And we won't have to play well to do it. That's the frustrating thing. Like, Pete is going to talk about his comment later on. And we're better than we think we are. And the reason why a lot of that is because the players are so in tune with what the other player does. They don't have to think about it. Trent can play a ball crossfield without looking because he knows where Robbo should be and Robbo will be there. Bobby can play a ball out to Salah because he knows Salah will be there, because they've done it so often. It's pointless trying to overthink this. As fans, we'll all get the twitches until the lineup is announced. But I guarantee you, if we turn up in any kind of form, we will put 3 past these as well. You know, I mean, they have the star players for a bit of magic. But if Cristiano Ronaldo thinks he can walk through this game, he's in for a rude awakening. You don't walk through a game against Liverpool and expect to come out with a result. It just doesn't happen.
Of all the players that I'm worried about, and people say worry about, it's like the amount of Ronaldo's finished articles and stuff that's going to come out across the course of the week is probably the one thing you don't want biting you in the arse, right? Because he can still smack it in from wherever he wants. They only need to get him free. And you know, we have given up chances, and thankfully we've had Alisson there. Kelleher was great again at the weekend.
But that's all he's got, though, Phil, in fairness.
I agree.
Joel Matip will bring the ball out from the back. Joel Matip will walk past Cristiano, give him a wave, and carry on going until he meets Fred. And he'll dance around Fred, and then he'll go into Matic, and he'll just sit down with your pipe and slippers there, Matic. You're a bit old for this game. And he's in on the back four. And he'll do it all the time. Do you know, Ronaldo, in the penalty box, is a genius. He will score goals out of fresh air. But outside of the box, he is without doubt one of the most frustrating, lazy players. And it must have split the dressing room already. And if it hasn't, it's going to split it later on down the line. Because if you're Mason Greenwood, and you're sat there at 18 years of age after scoring 6 goals so far this season, stuck out in the right wing, you're going to sat there and think, hang on. And you're Cavani, you're sat on the bench. What the hell's going on here? Why am I bothering? You know, it's definitely going to, it's a signing that's going to rip that dressing room apart by the end of the season. 100%.
I think you're right. The only problem is he'll accelerate the sacking of Ole. I think he's that influence. He is a born winner.
Yeah.
And he'll just bitch behind his back and he'll rally the Hawks around Ole, and he'll be gone quicker with him just in place. But it doesn't make it any easier for the next manager, because he's a kind of a must-play player. So everything has to change. The midfield has to change. You can't accommodate all those attacking type of players like Sancho, Rashford, Greenwood, Pogba, Fernandes. You can't just play all of them in the one team once or not. You play Ronaldo and then you have to fit him in.
You have to accommodate him.
Yeah, you have to play an attacker. Yeah.
And even when they had him before, Tevez and Rooney ran themselves ragged to do his donkey work so that he looked good and they won games. But he needed those blocking like players around.
He's a different player now, Kev. He's a different player now, to be honest.
He's a lazier player now.
Oh, yeah.
But lads, when you're 146 years age, aren't you entitled to be a lazy player? Like he's achieved everything.
It's not his fault. Yeah. It's not his fault. Yeah. He engineered the move.
Yeah.
Mm. Him and his agent engineered the move. They played a blinder. Mm. You know, leak it that I want to go to Man City, and Man City are interested after falling down with Kane. United's board saw a PR exercise and went, we can't have him going there. Instead of signing the DM that they needed or addressing the midfield options that they needed, they went out and bought a luxury that they didn't need. And
I think, Kev, I think Manchester
United... We're playing them at the weekend, Chad, just so you know.
Pete, can I just... I want to move on the point, right, because I want to bring it back to us, right? Particularly around this Klopp thing, overplaying it, because this is the one game that Salah hasn't really played well in the Old Trafford matches, right? He just hasn't had that performance yet. You know the way he's destroyed him in Liverpool? Like, you think about the year we won the league, the goal that more or less seals the league is that goal, that breakaway goal at the end of the game against him. And
he got two breakaway goals in the last at Old Trafford.
Yeah. So last year he gets a bit of revenge in terms of what was going on. But like, I want to see him. Is this not the opportunity in the form that he's in to absolutely backdoor the United fans in front of them while they're there, sitting there, protesting in their green and gold? Isn't this what we want to see? We want to see this. I want to see a schooling by Salah this weekend. I want him to literally put them back into their 1990 stadium box, send it to the moon.
Well, it's a distinct possibility if Harry Maguire plays. I mean, I can't believe this week, and I think I made the point today and yesterday, I can't believe that anybody who gets £500,000 a year to analyse football and use to play the game, like Alan Shearer, for example, or Michael Richards, could watch Leicester City and Manchester United and not make the point that Harry Maguire was absolutely at fault for every single goal that went in at Manchester United end. And I think everybody has adopted this, you know, his undroppable stance, including his own manager, about Harry Maguire. He will play against Liverpool this weekend, and Mohamed Salah will look to isolate him and absolutely destroy him. So this is a week in all fair. I mean, between Wan-Bissaka and Harry Maguire, that little pocket of space where Mohamed Salah and Sadio Mane operate, it's just license to print money from the lad's perspective. I mean, this is a week where, you know, he could effectively end Harry Maguire's career. So you're absolutely right. It could get really embarrassing. And of course, Solskjaer is going to back his £80 million centre back. He's going to play him. I cannot understand for the life of me why he wouldn't play Boye and Lindelof, but he's going to play Maguire. Nothing surer. Plays right into our hands.
I just want to put, for everyone listening, right, look, Siena is $5,000 away from the total that she needs to get on the Siena Steps thing that we've been supporting and pushing for ages. Pete's decided to get his hair braided until we hit the 5K, right? So they're braiding and unbraiding his hair until it happens. So if you want to see Pete being freed from Sunil's jail, sex chamber, if you want to call it, right, and allow him to get back to his hair. That's it. Paddy, you're asking where it is. I'd send you on the directions on the Google machine later on, and you can drop down there and she can braid your hair since you went off to Turkey. You've got a whole new set of hair. But everyone that's out there, we're $5,000 off. It's a tiny amount in relative to what we've managed to pull together in the whole appeal that this has been going on. So please, if you can do a bit more, if you can get anything together, please do so. It's so important that we give this girl a little chance at a normalised life. And I hate using the phrase normalised because you know different things happen to people and we still get to have good and rewarding lives that's there. So it's, but just to give her a chance to sort out what can be sorted out, which is really good. Right, back to the discussion. I sort of mentioned the club part. I've mentioned the players' part. There's, you know, United tend to up their game in this because they particularly when the fans weren't there because they were able to do it and they don't have the fair. But I think the fans actually negatively impact United team more, and I hope they get on their backs with their green and gold scarves as much as they can at the weekend. Protest, protest, protest. we'll keep protesting away, just throwing your toys out of the pram like the little babies that you are. But in reality, lads, we've a game before that, which is Atletico Madrid in the Champions League. Win that and basically secure qualification to the next phase. And it's also an opportunity for England to send out all of the Liverpool fans with COVID to reinfect Madrid as a revenge game for what they did last year in Anfield. Do we not agree?
Well, yeah, I think that's the plan, Phil, to be quite honest with you. No, I think the plan is to go and nick a point. Go and nick a point there tomorrow night. And it'll probably be as drab. I think you don't, I expect to see huge change. I expect Origi to start. I think this will be like it won't be exciting. It'll be a chess match. I expect a nil all or a one all, to be honest with you. Go home with a point. Get them back to Anfield, destroy them, to be honest with you. I think the focus will be, you know, on Old Trafford. Week, to be honest with you, I can't see
Kev, do you think the focus is on Old Trafford?
I don't know how he's going to go about this because, in fairness, Naby is this would be what 4 games in 9 days, 10 days if he plays tomorrow night. Virgil had a full international break with the Netherlands. We're sat, I think, on what 9 points with 3 to play. If you're going to not take liberties, but if you're going to use your squad, away is probably the night to do it. Now, it goes against the grain because it's a tough group and every game is vital and you might want to secure it early and play the squad more in the last 2 games. But I can definitely see a strong argument for making 4 or 5 changes tomorrow, especially at centre-back and left-back and maybe up front as well. Be it Jota and Origi or Jota and Taki. I could definitely see changes tomorrow.
Andy, what's your view with the 2 games so close and the relative impact of both games? What are you hoping to see?
They're not that close. There's Tuesday and Sunday. He goes full strength for both, whatever he feels is the strongest team probably to the game. I don't see many changes. Win this game tomorrow and get it done. At this stage, it'd be silly to be, just playing and making changes just so you can maybe nick a draw and carry this on any further. We've had an incredible start to the season in the Champions League and the league. So, yeah, no, full strength. Get the win there tomorrow night.
We owe them one. I think, lads, I go back to it. Like this, they ended their campaign two years ago? I think we've lost the year with the whole COVID shit, right? So whatever year it was that happened in Anfield with the Adrian game and stuff like that, for me...
The year before last, yeah.
Yeah, Atletico have been on my hit list for ages because of that game, right? And I'd love to go into their backyard and basically stomp all over them, get the 3 points and be able to park the Champions League until February, essentially, because you've guaranteed your qualification.
Yeah.
At the same time, Pete, we've got bigger squad depth than we ever had. I think it's about time Kanate got another game. We haven't seen him for weeks, right? If you wanted to give Van Dijk a rest, because Van Dijk himself has been coming out and saying, you know, he's still coming back from the injury and it's baby steps in terms of where he gets and he's not back up to speed. This, to me, is an ideal game to see what Kanate looks like in the proper fire of a European tie that has something riding on it before you get to the knockout phases, etc. around it. I think Tsimikas is somebody who has proven his ability in for the team, and I wouldn't mind seeing him.
Yeah, these are changes you can make without weakening the team, Phil. Like,
that's what I'm saying.
It's been unbelievable in pre-season, the games he has played this season. Kanate, what a luxury at the moment to be able to integrate a player, his quality, into the squad slowly and surely, just like Fabinho was brought into the team slowly, just like Robertson was brought into the team slowly. These are players that Klopp knows have a long-term future, but just get it right from the start. It's very hard to come into that Liverpool team and perform to the levels of expectation. But he'd have no problem coming into that game tomorrow, I'm sure.
Kev, you mentioned the Kayser thing. And I'd keep playing him because And the reason why I keep playing him is because the likelihood, the Murphy's Law part of Akita is that he's due an injury soon if he's played that many games in a row, right? Yeah. So you may as well get as much as you can out of him. My biggest worry with Akita, and I hope I'm wrong, is that there's been in some of the bigger European games, they've managed to successfully make him disappear. If you think about Madrid away in that knockout game and other things. But to be fair to him, he's played a lot better this season than he has. He seems to have adopted the Wijnaldum role when they've given him a game. And I think he needs to turn up in a big match. And this to me is a big match. This is a bigger match for me as the United game is, because as I said, you can essentially put your Champions League qualification to bed in October, which is huge for us.
Yeah, it is. The only thing that would worry me with playing him again, just in case he does break down, is you're sat there with James Milner, Jordan Henderson, Fabinho, and Curtis Jones coming back as your four midfielders for three spots going into a United game. I don't think you need to overplay this kid. If Jones is right, then you know, play him. Fabinho comes back into it. James Milner comes out, and he's ready for Sunday if need be. You've got Naby ready for Sunday if need be, with a week's rest in between. Come on for 20 minutes at the end, fine. You know, I don't think you need to flog him. Not this early in the season. There's no need of it. You know, you have a squad for a reason, and it's not a be-all, and it's not a knockout game. It's one of six.
And Kevin Ball makes a point. He says, you've forgotten Ox there. Ox is an option for the midfield.
That's easily done, unfortunately, these days. Yeah. You know, no disrespect to Ox, but he's not doing himself any favours to push himself into the side. He had a good pre-season. Anytime he's played, he's looked like he's trying too hard to do too much, to impress too much, instead of doing the basics and keeping it simple and just keeping the ball moving. Do that right, and then you're going to force Klopp to make a decision. But you try to be all things to all people, then you're going to find yourself watching.
Can't really blame him though, Kev. He's playing catch up to a kid that nobody thought was good enough for the squad. You know, he's miles behind Jones now. You
know, he's doing that with two of them though, isn't he? Because he was behind Elliot as well.
He's miles behind.
No? In all fairness to him, for the sake of his career, he does need a move. And unfortunately, it won't happen in January. It'll probably happen in the summer. But for the sake of his career, he needs to be playing football at his age. And I think with a heart and a half, I wish him all the best in the world to go off and play at a West Ham, a Southampton, a Brighton, you know, and revive your career. Because he's good.
He's a lot, you know.
Yeah.
Lads, there seems to be a heavy Liverpool fan presence that have gone over to the game, obviously with the memories of Madrid that they've had from winning the Champions League there, and there seems to be a lot of pictures and things floating around the internet about lads really soaking up the atmosphere. When I say soaking up the atmosphere, I essentially mean the wine, the beer, the meats, whatever they can get. And they've all brought their flags with them, which is great to see, because they're going to make a great spectacle in whatever fucking name of the stadium is, the Atletico Madrid Wonder Vision Stadium. The superstar stadio, the one division, in terms of what's there. But Andy, because you're a big flag man, you got the flag man to make it a flag, right? And it's a special flag that has a special message on it for reward when you get your flag out, and you love getting your flag out for the big games. But when you're standing holding your flag, how do you do it? Do you hold it this way, and then what do you do with the non-holding arm? Because genuinely, I was looking at this on the internet, and lads really struggle with the non-holding flag arm. They don't know whether to, so they start to do this one, where you have to sort of like you hold this, and you start to give it that one, or you get some sort of giving it like this one. What one for you would be what methods would you use with the flag, the non-flag holding arm? Because it's very important. So I want to know.
But it's like any photograph when you're standing there. What do you do with your hands? like, what way are your hands behind your back, at your front, to your side? Do you make a fist? Do you have them nice and relaxed? What do you do when you're in a photograph with your hands? It's always a kind of an awkward one, depending on the environment. I think if I'm holding the flag with one hand, the other hand is probably like giving it one of those or something.
You're giving it one of those ones.
Yeah, something like that. Or a wave. But this is just one of your things, Phil. Flags are cool. Mark Sweetman, who makes the banners, is exceptionally cool. He's one of the most talented people I've seen doing the work. He's doing the artwork. He's doing it. Just keeps getting better and better. He's doing a banner at the moment.
See, this is what's inspired it. Like, here's one of the lads out in Madrid. Now, look
that's
carefully.
That's one of Mark's.
Yeah. So you can see, he's gone with the sort of rigid stand where you've got your arms to the side. Not quite, just sitting in your pockets, just a rigid stand. And it's made here has gone for a more relaxed version, and fair play to him wearing the mask as well. That's a much more relaxed version of
I'm not really here.
Exactly. Potentially hiding, or I can hide if I hold it here. Put the mask on. This is me. Somebody else.
Can I also just say that Mark is releasing a book and it's available now for pre-order. So get on that as well.
Yeah, what's it called?
I don't know actually what it's called. You'll see it. Just go on to Twitter and look up our, Mark's page and you'll see it's quality. Be out for great Christmas present. All the banners he's done dozens over the last couple of years. Amazing work. Anyway, I don't see a problem with people holding banners. You have me laughing now because it's just like, you know, when you think about this sort of stuff over and over again, you kind of repeat it enough times, it starts to become funny. But like, banners.
What would you do with your hands? I agree with Andy. Hands are like the most random things.
Random? I mean, look, there's flags and there's flags. There's banners that are in Madrid now. And then there's the proxy show that was at St. James's Park yesterday where they're all sat there like that. And that was the most cringy, embarrassing, degrading thing I've ever seen in my life. See the Newcastle fans sat there waving their little flags after selling their souls to the devil. Mm-hmm. But that aside, I'd be the fiend who starts holding it with this hand and slide myself and everything else. You see nothing there. I might put my head out or something like that. But in fairness, I'm a bit of a round gentleman, to say the least. So I'd do my very best to slide on the inside of it.
I think as well.
That's way more interesting to talk about the car crash that was the beginning of that Newcastle game.
Well,
did you see the TV fixtures that have came out now on the back of the takeover?
There's a couple of things I'd like to discuss about this Newcastle bit, right? Because they're taken over by a group of people who butchered a journalist, right? Off the back of negative stuff about them. And that just seems to have gotten glossed over. Like, you know, it was confirmed by a US intelligence agency, the linkages to the royal family, etc. That was there. It's mad. It's absolutely mad. To think that somebody who's been involved in something like that is deemed to be a fit and proper person to own a club. Because ultimately, it must put the fear of God into the journalists in England, that particularly in Newcastle, if they say something wrong about the club, the outcome that could happen there, because just don't say anything wrong, you don't know what's going to happen to you. And two, Jamie Redknapp was hammered for an opinion.
No.
That fans don't care once teams are successful. And I'm actually on board this, right? I'm on board with this. At this moment of time, you saw the Newcastle fans turning up in their Arab costumes and everything like that, celebrating the fact that they're taken over by a multi-million pair. And they'd make out that Mike Ashley, with his work regimes and stuff like that has gone on in England, is horrific and he's a terrible person. Like, as far as I'm aware, Mike Ashley hasn't been involved in some of the human rights violations that the current owners have.
He doesn't butcher members of the LGBT community. He doesn't get involved in genocide. I mean, his minimum wage practices are a little bit questionable, but I'm pretty sure nobody has died as a direct result of Mike Ashley's actions.
Owning Newcastle. So,
this is the thing. Sky had an absolute meltdown over the Super League, right, and everything that went with it. And we had to listen to weeks and weeks of, as you call it, Phil, bilge from Sky, Neville, Carragher, the whole gang of them. And this is over football. This is over complete a football issue, greed in football. And they're, as you know, Kevin says, they're all over the TV fixtures now. They're lording these new owners. They're making out as if there's absolutely nothing wrong with this. And everyone's afraid to mention the elephant in the room. And that this is a bad thing for football. This is a bad thing. I hope they get relegated. I hope they get relegated and they buy a couple of good players that don't get them promoted and they stay down there and then they just fuck off.
Look, here's the thing. Redknapp in his piece yesterday failed to mention that he's best mates with one of the investors' sons, who he did a sit-down interview with not long beforehand. It was nicely omitted when he said that football fans don't care. Well, Newcastle fans gave a shit when it was Mike Ashley. Telling me they don't give a shit
now. Sean is saying it there in the group chat there, or in the comments, that there was all the zero-hour contracts, and they were all about the employment rights. Now that people are being butchered and literally chopped up and put in the super.
Here's the thing, Pete. If Mike Ashley goes and invests in Derby County, all that'll happen is that those same arrogants will move to Derby County with Mike Ashley, but Mike Ashley could save Derby County as a club.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at the end of the day, you can weigh up the pros and cons of that, but here's the thing. You Google human rights Saudi Arabia and you Google PIF fund, and just you don't even have to go into the rabbit hole or dance around the rabbit hole. Read from reputable sources like Amnesty International. Just spend 5 minutes. 5 minutes, read a little bit about Amnesty International, about what it's like over in that country. And then read a little bit about what the PIF fund is and when it was created and why it was created. And you realize that sports washing works.
I tell you, Kev, the worst take I heard, besides the LGBT Newcastle supporters statement, was Alan Shearer's take that this takeover is positive. Why? He says, because it will highlight the fact that there are human rights problems in Saudi Arabia and perhaps there can be changes. I've never heard such disingenuous tripe. I won't use the word I want to use in all my life. Talk about self-serving. I mean, it's disgusting. I really... And then the...
Don't believe me and Pete or Andy or Phil. Just spend 5 minutes on Google. Go on to Amnesty's own website. If you don't trust Amnesty International, go on a UN website. Go
sure
on.
Look what they've done to Amanda Stavely. That's not even horror. It's a film.
But this is my thing. That's the next thing I want to go around. Do you reckon that there's a load of replace bots, that these lads replace people with lookalikes or sort of lookalikes? Because I remember when Amanda Stavely started this process, she didn't look anything like she does at the moment, right?
And yeah. It's not her.
You hear people like being replaced. Like this happened with Pepe Reina. Do you remember Pepe Reina went to Bayern Munich, right? And then they replaced him with a larger version for a while after he got injured. And then he went to Napoli and he was replaced. And we've never seen the real Pepe Reina ever since. Because the fella that turned up at Aston Villa didn't even look like the fella that used to play for Liverpool.
He went for Oktoberfest and he decided to shack up with a bird there, I'm telling you. I know.
I'm telling you now, there's replace bots going on in the world of football, and I fancy that the Saudis are behind these replace
You're
bots.
You're making a joke over this now, Phil, saying that happened to Ryan. This is different. This is something that they should really
look, in all fairness, I don't like seeing all the comments going in about her appearance, to be honest. Look, it's I wouldn't fat shame someone. I don't like seeing people's image being degraded in that way. It's just not nice. There's no need for it.
I don't think there's any need for it, but it's
she's a strange looking fish. Don't get me wrong.
That's fair. If I thought it was her, it's not her though.
We don't think it's her.
This is the point we're trying to raise. I don't think it is her.
Yeah, we think it's somebody else.
No shame in if we don't believe it's actually the same person.
No, it's not the same person. An investigation needs to take place into what has happened to the original Amanda Stabby.
There's an investigation that they can carry out in herself.
She arrived in England to buy clubs a few times.
Yes, she tried and failed.
Failed to do so they sent back somebody else who successfully managed to do this.
I have to say,
who was the guy working on before he got to you?
there's like 11 of me. The lads will tell you that. I'm Phil Four tonight. There's another fella who's more clean shaven.
There's one in the background watching the NFL.
Yeah, there's one tweeting at the moment. He's over there tweeting.
So that's how you're managing to get the baby fed and do a podcast and watch the
NFL and all that crap. I'm one of octuplets. We just all got the same name, so we just randomly drop in on
same
different
hassle,
names.
Didn't it?
Yeah, it's easier that way. Pete, where's Sunil gone?
He's over there crying with laughter.
I want to see your after shot. I think if you don't come back looking the same next week, I want to know.
I'll be bald in 10 days.
That's what I want to know. Just so Neil is looking after people in the Premier League at this stage. Anyway, right, what were we talking about? And what else are we going to talk about? Actually, lads, I want to, before we get on to...
Balloon Olympics.
This is the Balloon World Cup. 3 hours I spent Googling Peru, the Balloon World Cup today.
Was that genuine? Peru are the champions.
This was the most amazing thing I've ever seen in my life. No. We used to do this as kids.
And if you went to an 8-year-old's birthday party, you were a superhero when we were playing this. We could hop sofas and everything. We even did it in our super slippers.
But yeah. Everything about what they put out there today, I was just there going, this is amazing. A car in the middle of the room, there's a table, two sofas. Also, now, Andy, did you look up the rules like I asked you? Because we were trying to figure out, you can't sort of just smack it into the ground.
It has to be an upward motion. Now, there was a couple of dodgy shots taken in the clips I seen where they were kind of more sideways. But the balloon sort of traveled in an upward direction.
Right. And it allowed knock stuff over, or like, in a house, if a balloon, like the panic that goes on, anyone who's a parent, we're all parents. So you know the panic when you see a balloon heading towards like a vase or a glass or something like that, right? And it's like, you know that inner panic that's like, I know I'm not going to get there. I know I'm not going to get there. And the kids are just like, and boom. And you're just thinking, surely there must be bonus points if you can knock over the glass or something like that with your balloon. And that's what the lads have to do.
You like gymnastics if you've got the style awards as well as the actual award.
So your form of attack is to hit the balloon at the glass thing and then it falls over, but you can defend it by catching the vase and knocking your balloon back at the same time. That would be like, that's what I want to know.
Can we just address that point there for a second? What the mistake Veranda Cheese is making there, he's associating American owners with what the American state are doing.
Yeah, this is American states haven't bought a football club yet for Ann and Cheese. When they do, we can have the conversation that you want to have.
This is completely different conversation altogether. Like, American owners are just businessmen in America. Yeah. You can't blame them for what American are doing across the world. It's the same way what the British did across the world. You can't blame English owners. But the difference is these people are complicit in these crimes.
The decision makers, their funds come directly from, you know, out of the hands of dead people. So.
No, it's not the state. Not the state. It's a group of lads who are just...
Like I said, spend a minute on Google. Actually, no. Google PIF fund Saudi Arabia.
No, don't. Google Balloon World Cup. Google World Cup.
Yeah.
Anyone? Seriously, I want to see the Balloon World Cup, and I want football removed from television. Right? I want removed television. Like it's the purest form of sport I've ever seen today. Was looking at what was going on. I'm still at this moment in time. It was the best thing I've seen. Two lads running around a pretendy room with a Volkswagen in the middle of a pretendy room, trying to play keep you up with a balloon. And even Andy, the bit at the end when he just gives up.
I think he was. It was just like, because he had made those shots beforehand where he got around the front of the car. But I think at that stage it was just too much. He was dead in his feet. What kind of footwear did he have to? Jump zone socks or something?
Socks, no.
Jump zone socks, you know, with the kind of
with the grooves on the socks, Mikasa. The Mikasa goalkeeper's gloves, except they have the rubber ribs on the bottom of the socks. Yeah. I'd insist that you have to
have them.
No, you have to. For me, in the Balloon Olympics, you'd have to wear Penny slippers. That's what are Primark slippers for the non-Irish here. Primark slippers.
You've got a rubber sole on the bottom so you can slide.
Yeah.
You've got to get the slide in.
So you can get that slide across. And I have to be on a wooden floor as well. It can't be but as a throw-in, right, a rug in the middle of the rubber floor. So you know where you get that slide and you hit the rubber and you go flying. Right, that to me is the bit that's most important with Balloon World Cup. I want to know if the Balloon World Cup is the pinnacle of the sport, when are the league matches on? When is the elite Balloon World Cup?
Laura Duffy nail on head as usual.
Yeah. And talk about things that are distracting us. Whose topic was football shit?
It's usually yours,
I seen that as a listed topic, and I don't remember anyone saying.
I don't remember anyone talking about that. Kev, can I ask you something? Right, you're big. And I know this is a bit random tonight, but I don't mind because I like randomness. It's a Monday night. The brains aren't really fully functional after the weekend, so you're better off having random conversations because it's just that's what Monday's all about. But Kev, you're a huge advocate of donor cards, right?
Yes.
So for anyone out there, Kev, why should we be carrying donor cards? Or is there an app that we can stick on our phones? Or what's the best thing to do here?
The laws changed in the UK. I mean, a lot of people in the UK listen and watch this and contribute in the chat and everything. And a lot of people in Ireland do as well. And the laws of the two countries are different at the moment. Firstly, look, I was directly affected by this. My daughter was born with liver disease. And she had a transplant when she was 20. And she got married, she had two kids, they not long moved into their first home. And sadly, she passed away in May of this year, at the age of 28, waiting for a second transplant. And to cut a long story short, between complications with COVID and availability of organs, she missed out. One came up about a month before she passed away, but it wasn't deemed suitable by the time it arrived in London. And the only thing I've wanted to say, I mean, in all the pods that I've done and all the interactions that I've had, this is the first chance I've had to be able to just say it from I've had this rolling around in my head for months, what I wanted to say. And basically, the UK have gone through an opt-out system similar to what they have in Spain, where if you, unless you go onto the NHS register and opt out of being an organ donor, you're presumed to be an organ donor. So what happens is in the sad event of your passing or a loved one's passing, a transplant coordinator will come and have a conversation with you. And it's an unfortunate, it's a horrible conversation for them to have if you haven't sat down with your partner and had the conversation yourselves. So this is mainly what I want to talk about is most people I know, the vast majority of people I've always known, would you give blood? Yeah, of course you do. Of course you would, no problem. Would you want your organs to be donated so someone else can have a kidney, a liver, a heart, an eye, whatever? Yeah, of course. Yeah, no problem. But they never go and have this conversation with their loved ones. And what needs to happen is it's an uncomfortable conversation for families to sit down around the kitchen table and have. But by having that conversation at a night, I mean, I'm not saying sit down with your 6 and 7 year old. I'm saying sit down with your adult children, if you have adult children, or your wife and say, look, if and when anything ever happens to me, this is what I want to happen. Just so that in the sad, horrific case that this does happen to you, because it does, then when the coordinator comes around and talks to you, you might not want to hear it, but you'll remember the conversation that you had with your husband, your wife, with your son, your daughter, with your mother, your father. And because those decisions need to be made quick. When my daughter had her first liver transplant, all we know is that it happened. She had the transplant, off the top of my head, I think it was the 31st of December. And we know that the organ had to come from the north of England. She was in hospital in London at the time, and the organ had to come from Leeds. And the only thing I can presume is that it was being around Christmas, New Year's, and there was an accident, car accident or a motorbike accident or something along those lines. And my daughter was the lucky benefactor of someone's sad passing. And out of that, I have two grandchildren that I absolutely worship the ground they walk on. But sadly, they are going to grow up now without their mother because due to COVID, due to hospitals being overstretched, due to an organ not being available. Someone not having the conversation, a family saying no. There are multiple reasons why organs don't, why organ donations don't happen, but something in the region of about 500 patients in Ireland alone die every year on a transplant list. And in Ireland, we need to carry the card. You can go on the web and order a card. You can carry the card and have the card on you, but you need to have the conversation with your loved ones, because ultimately you're not going to be there when the decision is made. Ultimately, it's your partner's decision. And
sorry, Kev, with or without the card, you know, in Ireland, can your next of kin make that decision without the individual that's passed having a card?
I honestly don't know. I'd assume that if it wasn't a death by natural causes, so it was an accident or something, a coordinator would probably come to the patient or come to the family if there was any indication from the, because you'd imagine a nurse or a doctor would have a quiet word with the person. Your husband or daughter, your husband or wife is a suitable candidate for organ transplantation. Mm. Is it something you'd be interested in? We can get a coordinator to come and talk to you. And what happens is the coordinator will come and they walk you through every step of the way of what happens, what's available. But the ultimate decisions need to happen quickly so that the organs can be reused.
Kev, look, I think I echo everyone in encouraging people to, especially in Ireland, to carry a donor card. Lads, don't know, my cousin at the moment is waiting for a lung transplant because of something that's happened, degenerated very quickly. And I would encourage anyone. It goes back to what we've been trying to do for Sienna, is to give that little girl a better chance at a better life for herself, just a normalized life. But our organ donation gives people a chance for life, not just a better life or a normalized life. It just gives them a chance to
There's thousands of people sat on kidney, waiting for kidneys.
Yeah.
Thousands of people, to give 2-3 days a week that they're going for dialysis up and down the country in Dublin, Cork, Limerick, Galway. And kidney transplants are so quick. You know, if they have the organs, they have the system in place to do the operations, they just don't have access to enough organs to be able to do what they want to do. And all these people want is a chance to live.
Yeah. And it's obviously a sad loss for the individual who has lost their life, but they're not just saving one person.
No.
Because there's multiple organs which can be spread across the list of kidneys, liver, heart, as you say, eyes. The amount of surgery that can take place to make someone's life better or save their life.
Even if the organs can go to science, they can use those. Even simple things, training doctors how to do transplants. It's not like they go to medical school and practice on animals all the time. There are times they need organs to use. They need to be able to study how they can do things better, how techniques can be improved on. All organ donations, if it can't be used in a patient, is not wasted. It can be used elsewhere. You know, just please don't worry about what if you carry the card, fantastic, absolutely fantastic. I really hope people do, but more importantly than anything, make your wishes known to your next of kin and make sure they know and make sure that you know that your greatest gift that you will ever give anyone is going to go forwards to provide another family and their extended family with, God willing, a lifetime of happiness, all from one decision and one conversation.
I think we can't echo that anymore. And Kev, thanks for telling.
It's not even telling
the story, but thank you for encouraging people to get out there and carry those donor cards and be donors, right? Because as I go back to it, you are given, and what you said, you are giving people the opportunity to keep their loved ones and to have a life, right? And it's the greatest gift. It's the reason why we're here. It's the reason why we're here, is to give people life, to pass on life to the next generation, so that goes on. So this is what, this is the fundamental basis of what being a true valuable human is being. So if you aren't carrying one, please do. It costs nothing. You don't have to do anything. You just go on, get it down. It costs nothing, right? This is so important for people out there. It costs nothing to do. There's nothing like at all. But if you can, please do it. And if you have any if you're queasy or query about it, whatever it is, look it up, look into it. Yeah. But it costs nothing. This costs nothing and can give and create a
life. That's my Twitter name on there. If anyone has any questions, if you can't find the answer, if I can't find the answer, we'll find the answer together. Message me, private message me, whatever, anytime. I'll get back to you and we'll find the answers that you're looking for.
Okay, look, Kevin, you know, and thanks for genuinely, thanks
thank
for sharing.
Thank you guys for giving me the platform to be able to say it. I've been wanting to say this since May.
Don't be daft. Like, if it's not the Balloon World Cup, we'd rather talk about something that's serious as well. Do you know what I mean? So it's important to have both sides. The reason why we talk here on Monday, it's not just about football. It's not just about nonsense. We're trying to make, if we can, make a difference to people. You know, it seems altruistic and all that type of stuff, but it, like, if you've got a voice and you've got a platform, it's time, you have a moral obligation to use it. So thanks for sharing with us. And I hate, do you know what I mean? I'm gonna switch away from it. So
yeah,
Pete, on that, you had some really gammy topic. What was it?
It doesn't matter, to be honest. I just want to reinforce what Kevin is saying. You know, we've seen so many people pass away over the last year, huge complications. And, you know, so many people go on about, what will I leave behind? They worry about their wills. People worry about, you know, we've seen so many people clash over, you know, their estates and stuff like that. If you really want to be remembered and if you really want to leave something behind of yourself, save people's lives. I mean, let's just echo what Kevin's saying. Get a free card. Don't rely on the whole default thing. Get yourself a free card and know that, you know, you're going to live on through something. You could save 6-7 lives. Let's just do it. Let's just do it. You know, at the end of the day, yeah. Sorry, Kev, you just killed me. You've killed me.
No, okay. So look, I think let me help you move along, right, in terms of what it is, and not in a funny way, but just let's just try bringing it back to the Newcastle conversation and something that's a growing topic, particularly I mentioned a while back. There seems to be a growing disengagement, and Arsene Wenger has talked about it as well, right? There seems to be a genuine disengagement by an awful lot of people who have been traditional football fans and are becoming less and less engaged with the overall product. I'm not going to say they're becoming disengaged with the football teams, but they're becoming disengaged from the overall product that's been produced and the way it's being produced, right? And myself and Gav, when we were talking last week, it was just until we were saying, how do you save football? And I said, look, Liverpool need to get the mafia in, because just to even up the score on the ownership side of it, right? But in all, like, is there a torn off going on? And how much of that is exacerbated by the fact that we've seen a bizarre product in terms of the lack of fans and all that type of stuff that went on, that it's constant?
Well, Phil, look at Manchester City. You know, all the money in the world, all the Worthington Cups you could possibly have in your trophy cabinet and a few Premier Leagues thrown in there. But have they actually increased their global footprint in terms of being attractive? You know, are they filling people joke about it, but are they filling the stadium week in, week out? So people are being turned off. And it's not, I'm not trying to be exclusionary and talk about it and build this, because that's the antithesis argument. Oh, you know, you're just in that club with Liverpool, Manchester United, AC Milan and Real Madrid where you don't want anyone else in. No, this whole thing is supposed to be an exercise to garner support. It's like, I don't know, starting a band and hoping that the music, a lot of these, like Louis Walsh will throw £1 million into four guys from Sligo, but eventually millions of people worldwide will buy their records. But that's not the case with Manchester City. They have the success, but they don't seem to have, I'm not hearing, you know, huge demand in the Far East to watch their football, you know, despite having, you know, the best, so-called best, you know, philosophical coach on the planet. So I don't see that as a success. I still hear that Manchester United and Liverpool and the traditional big clubs are the big draw. So Is it successful? No. I think you're right. Andy and Phil, the point that you're making is, are people turning off? I think they are. I think people are like, people aren't stupid. You can't shove it down people's throats. There's only so much that people will buy into. There's no story. I think, ironically, Newcastle might have a better chance of having that global appeal because they were traditionally a popular club. Newcastle will sell out their stadium. And if they were to add on to St. James's Park, if that's possible, they might sell another 10,000. So maybe that's a model that could work. But I think you're right, Phil. I think people are turning off. I don't think the answer is to add another 5 or 6 super clubs to the rostrum. I think football is just one of those things where people have decided traditionally. It's like politics, where if you add another party to US politics, is that going to be the answer? No. People will either be red or they'll be blue. They'll either be Republican or they'll be Democrat. I don't think bringing another superpower to the table is going to make it any more attractive. That's my opinion.
Yeah, kind of disagree. You know, we might claim, you know, we're becoming more disengaged from football because football, like most people, when they grow older, like they always say it was better years ago. I mean, the time when the FA Cup mattered and the atmosphere in the ground, it all sounded a lot better. But the fact of the matter is, football globally is a growing sport still, and there's more and more and more money. It's just being consumed in a totally different way. I'm looking at the comments there. A lot of people talking about how younger people are getting into brands and getting into players as opposed to teams. I think that really fanatical element, that rivalry is probably dwindling a little bit, but football is just changing and it's getting increasingly more and more wealthy. You might not like it, but that is the reality. That's why there's so much money in it now, because people are prepared to spend ridiculous money, and it's just evolving. And like it or lump it, it's not going away. It's only going to get worse. You might hope that one day the bubble will burst and things might go back to a more, you know, palatable level, because it is quite sickening. You know, yeah. Talking about clubs like Newcastle and City, yeah, they always had their massive fan bases. But if that switch is knocked off at City and they go back down, they just go back to where they were, just like that. Clubs like Liverpool and United, Celtic, they'll always have it all over the place. It doesn't matter whether they're good or they're poor. You might lose those fans who kind of got into it just because of Salah or whatever, or just because of the glamour. But it's just an unfortunate reality. Things change for the good or the better. And I just think, yeah, football is, you know, for me, it's not the product it was. But for other people, it's on the up.
Well, not the sport, Andy. Not the sport. Do you honestly think, I mean, I don't doubt football, but do you honestly think you can produce another super club out of an also-ranked club? I don't.
No, I mean, like, look at PSG. They buy all the players, but they're yet to win the Champions League, and they used to win the French League anyway. I mean, it's kind of a pointless thing that's going on there. It is just a glamour thing, you know, the brand, the Air Jordan thing there. Kids going around with PSG shirts that don't know anyone beyond Neymar and Mbappe and Messi, and you know, they never had any interest in French football, let's face it. And they don't care if they win or lose.
Kev, can I ask, how much of this is grumpy man syndrome? Grumpy old man syndrome?
Some of it is, but here, I mean, I watched Match of the Day the other night and watched the Southampton Leeds. Notice Southampton wasn't even remotely close to full. I'd say there was maybe 3/4 of the ground was there. It reminded me of going when I was living in Bristol to watch Southampton when they were in the lower leagues, when they were at Liddell. You know, even back then when they were in the Championship and they moved to St. Mary's, and they weren't filling it. Tomorrow in the UK, there's 17 games being broadcast live by hook or crook across different platforms, from the under 18 Champions League games right up to tomorrow night's Champions League games with championship games thrown in the middle, 17 games. There's nothing special about tomorrow night. Liverpool versus Atletico Madrid in the one the Metropolitano Stadium should be an absolute standout fixture that we are all sat here talking about nothing else tonight but that fixture and talking about the players they have, the players we have, the competition that they're in. It's not special anymore. You know, and we're what my topic was, originally was about saturation. It's not about there's nothing special about games on anymore. When Sky took it over, and this isn't grumpy old man syndrome, this is common sense stuff. Mm-hmm. When Sky took it over, you had the 4 o'clock game. Then you had the two games on a Sunday. Then you had, the UK government said Sky are monopolizing football, so you had to diversify. Satanta comes along. Satanta goes bust. BT comes along. Okay. So BT gets a slot. Sky retain the majority of the good slots. But then they add to them. Then Premier Sports come along. And now Amazon have come along. And I guarantee you DAZN and Netflix are looking at this model as well. Then you've got Arsene Wenger turning around talking about a World Cup every 2 years. And if Wenger's talking about that, Infantino is going to do the same thing with the Euros. And by the way, we still have the Olympics going on as well every 4 years. So they're going to have their tournament. At what point Thibaut Courtois was right in what he said. At what point do you turn around to the players? Say, lads, are you capable of producing the same intensity football that we all love to watch in the Premier League for 80 games a season? And the possibility of a 39th Premier League game has never gone away. That possibility is always there as well. These players are supreme athletes. They're not machines. And you can't expect them to go at the performance levels the fans want to see, not at the volume of games that they're being put on. And the argument against it is, well, they're paid loads of money. Footballers have always been paid loads of money. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Apart from, you know, when the likes of Jimmy Hill was running took over the PFA, then the owners had all the money. But ultimately, it's the fans who pay. And you're seeing it at grounds like Southampton. You're seeing it at smaller mid-table Premier League clubs where a father can't take his two kids to a Premier League game because it's the bones of half a week's wages. At some point, there has to be a hands-up moment, a light bulb moment, when someone says, look, we can't keep doing this. The cost, the atmosphere in the grounds is what Sky and BT want. The Premier League is the product that it is because of the atmosphere that's created in the grounds, the intensity of the fans, the intensity of the game, and the intensity of the players. If Sky want to have that product into the next decade, they can't keep doing this to players. I mean, I think it's obscene what footballers earn. Hands up. It's obscene. Always will be. But I'd rather the players got paid than the owners kept the money. But ultimately, I'd like the fans to be able to afford to go to games without having to spend half a week's wages to go and do it. And then spending another €100 on top for your Sky subscription so you can watch the games that you enjoy watching. You know, there has to be a light bulb moment somewhere along the lines where someone says, hang on. You know, and that's not grumpy old man syndrome. That's nearly 50-year-old me saying, have an ounce of common sense.
But do you think, though, that this is just the ultimate fulfillment of the model that they wanted to build once they were able to create 24-hour sports channels? And they've missed a key point in the sports that have been successful in retaining audience engagement. And there's few, but I'll say one that I think is incredibly, if you want to look at saturation in terms of coverage, and then you also want to look at how they've managed the product. I always go back to the NFL. It's got bigger viewing audiences than it's ever had.
Yeah,
it's becoming a global sport in that they moved some games away from the States. That's in Mexico. They've gone to England. There's more games going on in England. But they didn't go the route. Now, they are looking at they've done the 17th game this year, which is similar to what football has done. But they've avoided up until now to really saturating in terms of going for a 9-month season, increasing to 24 games, increasing the playoffs to a bigger staff, and just going bigger, 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 bigger all this way, right? It's been very slow in terms of their expansion. So the more games, the more games, the less relevant every game becomes. And I think this is one of the things that Sky has lost. I think this is one of the things where football has lost. But they want those games on the television purely because they're paying so much. So they need product. And this is product filler. This is what it used to be like when they'd buy the A-Team for RT1 or Knight Rider, or Aaron Spelling back in the 80s used to write the same show over and over again, but just change the names and change the premise. But it was the exact same thing over and over again. It was Dallas. It was Dynasty. Same show. One was in San Francisco. One was in Dallas, right? Knight Rider, Street Hawk, Airwolf, Blue Thunder. It's basically the same show. There's a vehicle. There's the baddies. Yeah, they come after the baddies.
It talks.
That was it. Chips on the bike. Then you have like, but it was the same show over and over and over and over and over and over, yeah, and over again. And that's what it was, right? So what we see now is. But it is. It's the commodification of football. It's
at least they didn't have the cheek to charge us extortionate funds to watch them.
In fairness, I think the NFL have looked at baseball, and so we're not going down the baseball route. Baseball have a league season of 162 games.
Yeah, but that's the way the Premier League's gone. There's going to be 162 Premier League games all played on a Wednesday.
It's crazy, correct me if I'm wrong, Phil. I mean, you can have more American football games without putting massive pressure on the players. Half the players don't break a sweat.
Well, Andy, the NFLPA, which is their players' association, have put blocks in to prevent them playing more than X amount of games. And when they agreed to play an extra game, they had to lop off one of the preseason weeks, so that they were still playing the same net amount of games every year. The average career in American football is 4 years. It's not like soccer, where
because you're going to get smashed up.
The other side of it is you'd always get U.S. cities would vie for an NFL team. They would all love an NFL franchise. I mean, you look at New England, right? I mean, I lived over there for a few years. I lived in Hartford, or near Hartford. So you had Foxborough Stadium was just up the I-84. So, and it was 50 miles from Boston.
Yep.
You're about another 80 miles from Hartford. Then you had Rhode Island and Vermont and all of that in the surrounding area. But I guarantee you, a city like Hartford, when Hartford lost the NHL side that they had back in the 80s when I lived there, it was that was the only sport that the city had that was recognized and televised anywhere. Now, their biggest sport, their biggest draw in the city is UConn basketball. Yeah, and it's not UConn men's basketball, it's UConn women. UConn women's Huskies is the biggest draw in the city, bar none, anywhere.
But this goes back to my point. There's still a saturation level in terms of coverage, right? The analyze down to the levels of what color socks people are wearing from a training session to the bus, right? That still happens. But because you don't have as many games, right? Going back to your point, they haven't gone the MLB thing, which is 160 games. They're playing a game every 10 minutes, and the games go on for 5 hours. It's like or 10 hours or whatever amount of hours it goes on. Nobody cares. The viewership has fallen off. And unless football gives something. So we have the League Cup, we have the FA Cup in England, we have the League Cup, the FA Cup, the Premier League, and then you've got whatever European competition your team is in. It's too many. There's too much. Like, honestly, and I know I get slaughtered for this, but like, nobody really gives a shit about the FA Cup outside of John Motson and the BBC, right? Like, nobody in the world gives a shit about the FA Cup unless you are Brentford or somebody, right? And what's going to happen is they all get, you'll hear the romance of the cup, right? Binning. There's a load of weekends. The international football. Nobody gives a fuck about international football. I hate to break this to people. You can pretend you care, right? The only reason the English go to international football is so they can start fights and do hooliganism, right? That's the only reason they turn up for it. Like, there's no other reason apart from that. Sorry.
You ask the Brazilian lads, they love nothing more than going home to represent Brazil.
They love going home because it's carnival. That's why they love going home.
Yeah, but mate, they've always been like that. When they used to go back with Uruguay, it was the same. It's a very English thing that they hate the national team. Or there's no association between the national team and it's club over country. You know, but that's a lot of the cases because the clubs in England are so damn big. You know, I mean, if you're in Spain, Pete, you're out there. If the Catalan region had a national team, I guarantee you the Catalan region would come out in droves for that.
So. Yeah, they're not bothered about Spain, which is weird. You know,
but they would be if it was a Catalan. If you could say, right, you've got to pick the players from Bilbao, Barcelona, and that
they
region.
Do it once a year. They do it once a year, Ken. They do it once a year.
Australia do it with the AFL, don't they? The Origin series.
They have a representative game every year where the Basque Country plays against Galicia, plays against Catalonia. Strangely enough, Madrid doesn't send the team because they don't think it should happen. But it's interesting, you know, the Catalan team.
I always thought the Charity Shield should have done that. Instead of having the league winners and the cup winners, UK and Ireland side versus the rest of the world side based on the players that are in the league, managed by the two managers who've won trophies that year. But going back to what you're saying about the cups, I've always believed that the sides who are involved in Europe shouldn't be involved in the League Cup.
I don't think it should be involved in any cups. Well, I think if you're in the Champions League, it's the league and Champions League. If you're in the Europa League,
the cups.
If you're in the Europa League, it's the league and the Europa League. And then for the teams that can't make it into it, they play in the Pretendi Cups, right? And then the Pretendi Cups get you a route into the Europa League, which means that you miss out on the Pretendi Cups the next year. Because ultimately, lads, look who wins the FA Cup. It's either Manchester City, or Chelsea, or United, or Arsenal, right? That's who wins it. And then look who wins the FA Cup. See past text, right? Like, it's not like
I get you, man.
Leicester, sorry, but they, again, Leicester in Europe, Leicester have been finishing top six. So there's this imagination that something can happen in a cup. Can't. It's like saying that global warming's not happening. It's not going to happen, right? And I'll go back to international football. What's the point in international football? What's the point in Andorra playing Luxembourg? Right? What's the point in any of that?
What's the best nights for of your you're not far off my age. You remember Italia 90, what it was like over here?
Yeah, I remember World Cup 86. It's my formative year of football, right? And that's before saturation happened, and it was exotic, but football
was
different.
Mine was 82, and it was like you've got all these games, and these games are on every day. You're insane. I was sat there and I was glued to our sports stadium in Billaghurley. I watched a lot, you know. But in 1990, I was 18. And I swear to God, I've never seen a country go berserk.
Yep.
For soccer like it did in 1990. I was in America in 88, so I didn't have a clue what was going on.
Well, Kev, the key difference then was football was very restricted in terms of, so your international football represented the cream of the leagues that were playing. So if Spain were playing Italy, the cream of the Spanish talent played in Spain, and they played the cream of the Italian talent. For Ireland, Scotland, England, Wales, they all played in England, right? So essentially they were, and that was the coverage that went on. Nowadays, it's just everything is the Champions League. This is the truth behind it is the Champions League is the pinnacle. If FIFA were smart, they'd bin off international football and say, right, we're creating the FIFA World Club Cup and we're going to replace.
It
is coming.
That's on the cards.
And that's where you go. You focus in one part of the season and it builds up to this carnival atmosphere of club football. Imagine having a group of, a bit like the Champions League, but it's done on a much shorter basis and it's done over a five-week period where there's knockout stages and stuff like that. That would pull in bigger ratings than any World Cup will. Despite what people think, because you'll have the South American champions, you'll have the European champions, you'll have all the lads that went on. Listen, as far as I'm concerned, international friendlies are just like a pandemic. Bin them, right?
Yeah, but that's why I like the Nations League. I watched the Nations League semi-finals and final last week. And they were cracking games of football because they were against well-matched sides. You know, they weren't like the friendlies. There was something on it. And just by watching the games, you could see there was something on it. The players bought into it, you know, and they gave up some cracking games. Saying that, I wouldn't have had any interest in watching it if it was the group three or group four of the Nations League. But because it was the top tier and it was the top four nations in Europe against each other, I mean, it is a brand new venture, but the games, the quality they produced was great. It really was.
So
are we kind of contradicting ourselves here? You know, are we being hypocrites?
Well, of course we are.
Like we're giving out about the kind of the growth of money in football, and then we're just saying bin off the football that actually really does matter. Like going back 20 or 30 years, the football that really did matter was the international football. And we're saying
football so as you could get into the international team.
But that was all we had, though. That was all we had. There was nothing else on.
It's not reasonable, Andy. Sport now is global, and that's where everything changes once it becomes global. Because when you have the best players spread across various different leagues, that piece of what made international football relevant is gone. International football then was the pinnacle because the best players from each league were primarily that nationality, right? And they were representing each other in these tournaments. Now it's not the case.
It's not the top tier standard anymore. I mean, the top tier standard for football is the Champions League.
Yeah. I think the best thing.
There was a time when international football, when the international teams got together, the top international teams would beat the top club teams if they were to play them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Nowadays it's the complete opposite. You know.
Do you remember they did it years ago in Lansdowne Road, and it was Liverpool versus the Republic of Ireland side.
Yeah.
It was in the late '80s, and it was a testimonial or something, or a friendly or something.
Was it Ronnie Williams' testimonial?
It might have been, but I think it was at Talca Park because I don't think it was at Lansdowne Road. But might have been, I don't know.
Can I just address Antoinette McConville? Gula Lazio. I think you're probably trying to get at Go Lazio, which was this theme tune from Italian 90 on Channel 4. Gula Lazio could also be some type of Halloween spell incantation towards the Lazio football club. And
or their some Hungarian.
In terms of what's Gula? Gula Lazio.
We've all just, look.
I have to say, Andy, I'm incredibly turned off by anything that's not Liverpool these days when it comes to football. I struggle to watch anything else.
Me too.
There was a time when I'd sit down and watch German football and French football, and I was really into it, and I liked watching all these players come through. And now I just don't care. I don't know what I'll say it. It's my age. I've got too much stuff going on outside. Where before you were just wasting time and trying to figure out what it is, right? But I think that it's an age thing. However, what I think what's really interesting is, and it was mentioned at the very top of the comments, the way younger people now watch football. So when I was watching it, you were watching your team, and I had teams in various different leagues that I follow religiously in terms of what it looked like, but Liverpool was still the best thing that was there. Red Steve Field doesn't watch anything but Liverpool and doesn't even watch that. That's probably a fair show. I don't watch it live. I prefer to watch it on playback so you can remove the emotion and see exactly what's going on. I have to say, Red Steve, I'll be straight with this. Doing podcasts ruined my enjoyment of being a fan, right? Because you have to be rational when it comes to what your opinions are. And I know people think, but to have a difference of opinion or to throw up a different sort of viewpoint than what's just there as groupthink, it's really, you have to sort of look at a game as cold as you possibly can. And I really struggle. But these big emotional games, like the United game, like my body temperature drops and everything when I watch it live. And it's horrible. It's like you have one of those comfort blankets. You know those weighted blankets, Andy, that you need to wear, that you need to put on you to make you
discovered these things in the last kind of week or so. That is a funny concept. People buying blankets that are heavy to keep them like pinned to the bed.
They used to be night terrors. Do you remember when the old lady?
Do you have a weighted blanket, Pete?
I did. You know, that blanket. It was at the top of the wardrobe. You take it down the window, and your man would tuck it right under everything else.
Oh no, this is totally different. This is different, Pete. This is like there's people now buying medically, like they buy them in chemists and stuff. They're blankets that have weights in them. They're for sleep anxiety and stuff like that. So you get into bed and instead of just putting a duvet or a blanket over you, you put like a big lead fucking thing on top of you. Or it's full of
those weighted blankets were originally designed for children on the autism spectrum because it was seen to calm them down and relax them. And now the adults decided, you know, when the fidget spinners came out and then all the adults, you start to see adults walking around on the Lewis with the fidget spinners. You're like,
That's fair enough. That's fair enough. It's been proven to help autistic kids. Great, happy days. But there was an advertisement for one, and there was a woman sleeping on a sofa with her feet sticking out, like, and that gave me anxiety looking at her. Like, first of all, you don't sleep with your feet out of a fucking duvet or blanket of any sort, and you don't sleep in the sofa. Like, I mean, what are they doing advertising it like that? You know what I mean? Pinned to the sofa, sweating, feet sticking out, like,
Do you not think you just threw one of those old fashioned snorkels over your bed? That'd be enough, like, because they were like lead balloons. They were
just getting normal, like a normal duvet. Put a brick on top of you, big cavity block, and stick your feet out at the bottom. Stick them into a big ice bucket.
Kev, do you sleep with your feet sticking out the bottom of the duvet?
Got no choice. I'm 6 foot plus.
Do you not get long blankets?
I got a dog at the end of the bed who'll just like curl up into my feet.
That's a bit of a weighted blanket. If you get a big enough dog just to lie on top of you.
Yeah, he's a big sappy, so in all fairness, he does whatever the fuck he does whatever that he wants.
There's people defending the weighted blankets, Andy. I think if anyone's out there selling weighted blankets, will you send one to Andy so we can try it out and he'll do a review for us on the pod next week?
I'll get down to Mayfield and I'll sleep in a tent in a field with a weighted blanket.
But you don't think like a weighted blanket would be a fire hazard? Like, say, you know, the fire alarm went off in your gaff, right? And you know when you're a bit that dozy when you start to wake up and it like takes, it's really hard to get up out of bed. Like the weighted blanket was just an excuse not to move. It was like, forgo, I go.
We'll keep it safe after you've had about 8 or 9 pints. That's all it is. Yeah. Make sure you don't fall out the bed.
Pete's gone. He must be going off to finish his hair. We're getting a good view of what's going on there. That's definitely an outside I can see there as well. That's fantastic. Yeah. Pete's always interesting. He always goes off in mid pod wander, but the pod's nearly over at this stage.
It's a mad world.
It is a mad world, and there's many other mad things that we need to address as we go on. Sal's Big Dog says, "Come on, Andy, we'll go bushing." What does that mean?
I don't know. Kevin might know being from down that neck of the woods.
Not that far.
Polly walnuts, they're handy for weighing down the bodies dumped in. Okay, fair enough. Right, so that's been the forum for tonight. I want to thank everyone for watching. All the comments coming in to keep us going in terms of what's there. And Dicko has spent in the same comment about 9 times that the Premier League have said the Newcastle sponsorship deal has been refused. I noticed Ant, but I don't care about Newcastle, to be quite frank at this stage. I just like giving out about the fact that their mad owners are in charge. Hopefully you'll never come across the Saudi embassy as I'm walking past the gates, because you know yourself.
Be careful if they start sending you. We'll send the company jet to give you a tour of the head office.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they invite you. Come on in, a lovely dinner. No. Oh, you're making a stew? Yeah, no, forget that. Forget that. I'm not getting involved. That's not for me. Anyway, I want to say a big thanks. But also, before I go, the Siena Steps, as I said, 5K off. It's the last big push. If you know anyone that hasn't donated, if you know anyone that wants to donate, if you know anyone to be interested, please go and do it. Kev, thank you for sharing the story. If you aren't carrying a donor card, please go and do so. As I said, it's free, costs nothing, and it can give somebody a life. Andy, please get yourself a weighted blanket and come back with a review as early as you can. And Pete, we're looking forward to seeing what you turn into this time next week, given that for some reason you're getting special effects done a week before you have to get them done. Weirdo. You're walking around Barcelona just looking like a fellow with what's the look you're going for? Get up the yard.
I don't know, whatever they tell me.
Are you going to tell us what this is about?
No, I'll show you. I'll send you a link when it's done.
Okay, you send me a link when it gets done. I'm trying to picture what you look like there.
Oh God, no, the dog's dinner.
Oh Jesus. I just read that comment.
yeah, I know. Come on, get out of here before the comments get worse.
Good night. God bless. Talk to you next.
Social Podcast Network.